Square and Portland University. Additionally, there are also ticketed evening events featuring speakers and local musicians. Again, that's the Village Building Convergence taking place June 1st through 10th at locations all over Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fargring. Show is Fight the Empire. Today we're going to kind of look far back in the past and as far ahead in the future as we can. I suppose a lot of it's common knowledge now that the gas you put in your car the other day was refined from oil that nature formed millions of years ago. And in the ancient times, oil, petroleum, it wasn't petroleum, then just sort of oil and tar kind of bubbled up from the ground in various places. I don't know how many of you have ever been to L.A. to see the La Brea Tar Pits. It's like this big black pool of tar by the museum there. But back in the ancient days, 4,000 years ago, asphalt was used in the building the walls of Babylon. The Chinese were able to refine petroleum in a modest way, and they used this fuel in the 4th century BCE. Well, it was pretty small scale. For most of human history, people depended on human energy or farm animal energy and firewood. And then at some point they got into coal. That kind of came along, in the 1700s. It was coal power that really kick-started powered the Industrial Revolution. And then along came oil. They figured out a way to refine the oil or this black viscous liquid into oil that was usable in various stages of refinement. This happened in the early 1800s. And it's interesting to think that the first U.S. oil well was the one in Pennsylvania, and they drilled down in 1859, and they discovered oil at 69 feet. Now, later on, we had these gushers in Texas and Oklahoma, where they drill down a little bit, and the pressure of the oil, pressure on the oil, just sent it streaming up through the pipes, up into the air, 100 feet into the air, and that was then. Oil was cheap and it was plentiful; it was all over the place, and it was this oil that was the source of our prosperity. With that oil, you could magnify the labor of a human being. Think of a farmer. Well, suppose you had if you have a garden and you just have hand tools, you'd really have to work every day, all day, just to dig up the ground, plant your seeds, pull out the weeds and everything, and maybe feed your family and a few other people. It's very difficult work. Well, if you have a rototiller, you can have a bigger garden. But if you have some of these big, huge farm implements, these harvesters and combines, you can farm acres and acres all by yourself. You know, one farmer can feed, they say, 100 people. So the farm population in this country has really shrunk a lot in the last, say, 200 years. And so this is how energy magnifies the labor of one person. And as long as we do have that cheap and plentiful energy, our prosperity can continue. I have a chart here. It shows that for centuries, the energy consumption was at a very low level. And then around in the early 1800s, it started increasing slightly with coal. And then around 1860, it started in 1880, you had the oil added to the economy, and then that really took off. And then after that, you had natural gas. And these all combined had this really steep upward curve of energy use, kind of really starting around 1900 and going on into the year 2000 and since. This really sharp upward curve, which is the sort of the same curve that that covers our prosperity and our well-being and our population. So we can see how these are all interrelated. A lot of historians and social scientists, they took a snapshot of this process. It's like coming into the middle of a movie and trying to figure out what happened before, or really not even thinking about it too much, just focusing on what is happening while you're seeing the movie. And so these historians focused on sort of what happened with the Industrial Revolution and beyond. They sort of, the beginning of this steep upward curve, and they really kind of assumed that it would, this amazing progress would never end. Among them was Karl Marx. He thought that too. In fact, I think, I don't want to oversimplify his beliefs, but he felt that productivity, we would produce so many goods that they would kind of overwhelm the market. There was no sense selling goods when they were that plentiful. And that's what would sort of overturn capitalism. Well, it didn't really turn out that way. I guess we do have a lot of goods, but some people are just as poor as ever. But so if you just look at that snapshot, you're getting a false picture. We might also look at if this snapshot kind of coincides with the United States, the beginning of our nation, where we we dispossessed the Indians and took over their land, and we had huge natural resources right there at our command. We kind of like busted into nature's treasury. And that only happened, about 200 years ago, starting 200 years ago, or a little more than that. But the frontier is gone, and we sort of we had this huge reserve of natural resources. The Europeans thought of it when the Americas were discovered. They thought of this as like a second world, all for their benefit, which also included slaves, which they imported from Africa. So that era is coming to an end also, and we used up our share. So what do we have left? We have, 900 or 1,000 military bases around the world. We have a huge military budget, the biggest in the world, as much as the rest of the world combined. We have a huge debt, and as growth slows down, we've always depended on growth to pay off these debts, but if the growth slows down, there's really no way to pay the debts. So then they, what happens then? We also have the most garbage in the world. America not only uses up a good share of its natural resources, it also spews out a big share of the world's garbage. Well, there's a reason why oil is getting more expensive. It's because we picked off the easy stuff first. That oil well in Pennsylvania, the ones in Oklahoma. Now we have to dig thousands of feet under oceans, and then we have to do lateral mining, and then we have to do fracking, which is we inject tons of water and sand into these wells and kind of force out little small globules of oil. And so it's like really scraping the bottom of the barrel. And our engineers keep coming up with better ways to scrape, but eventually you kind of scraped all there is. There's nothing more. And we are getting to that point. These fracking wells, they deplete very rapidly. They're also very expensive. They leave a huge mess behind. And there's a way of looking at this called energy return on investment. There's two ways of thinking that. You can think of investment in money, where fracking or drilling under oceans is obviously a lot more expensive than just sinking a pipe into the ground in Oklahoma. It costs more. It also costs more in energy. It takes energy to get the energy. And that's where you get this sort of ratio. Well, with the first oil well, the ratio might have been 100-1, where you get like 100 units of energy for every 1 unit that you put in. But that ratio keeps sinking all the time. And depending on what kind of oil you're talking about and the wells and everything, the energy is down to maybe 30-1, 20-1, 10-1. And when it gets low enough, there's no point in even drilling for oil. I don't think we'll ever get to that point because we'll probably knock it off sooner. But if it costs you as much to drill to get the oil as you get in return, why even bother? So here we are. We have all these military bases, a huge military that runs on oil. And when you think about it, who are our main war targets right now, the ones they talk about the most? Well, they are Russia, Iran, and Venezuela, all of whom have oil. And I don't think it's any coincidence that we have our eyes on these nations. And the kind of wars we fight are the, you know, with all the military equipment, the air power, the sea power, use up a huge amount of oil. And so it's a sort of a weird struggle. It's a weird way to fight a war where you use up what you were hoping to gain. And also, the Pentagon, the U.S. military, is one of the biggest sources of world pollution there is. And so that's the situation we find ourselves in now. We're at the end of this 1,000 or 2,000-year process in using the oil that nature put in millions of years ago. You might ask, what are the wars of the future going to be like? Well, they probably will not be, there'll be no sea battles because aircraft carriers are just use up too much oil, too expensive. They're also sitting ducks for missiles. There'll be no air power. And future battles will be fought on the ground with probably lightly armed, well, maybe not too lightly armed, but soldiers, foot soldiers, carrying their weapons with them, which could be rocket launchers or whatever. And so the supply of oil is shrinking, and we're beginning to realize now that supply is not the real problem, it's also pollution. We are running out of places to put to put all our waste. I don't know if people remember how plastics used to be the future. Now we see that plastics are a poison. They are a source of death that is in our food chain. All these plastics, they don't get the ones that don't get recycled. They break down into smaller and smaller pieces, and they wind up in the food chain. The small kind of like plastic grit is digested by small sea creatures, and then the little fishes eat those creatures, and the bigger fish eat the little fish, and that's how it ends up in our digestive system. We eat the fish. The other day there was a whale that was found. I think a whale was killed, and they opened it up and they found a huge amount of plastic bags in this whale's stomach. There's so many plastic bags that the whale was not able to absorb and digest real food. Whales survive by swimming around, just sucking in vast amounts of plankton and little sea creatures, which they kind of sift out and digest. That is their food supply, and so all these plastic bags really get in the way and stop that process, and that's what killed this whale. Apparently, it's killed a lot of whales. So now we see, if people want to call in with questions or comments, the number to call is 503-231-8187. So we might look at the future. What kind of future do we have where there is where oil is in short supply? Well, we do have electric cars, and we have electric trains, and so with electricity we can still transport goods and people, and it doesn't really look like there's any chance of having electric airplanes. So there goes air travel. And then we think of electric power. Is it going to be enough for all the new uses that we talk about? But we do have a caller online. Natano's on the air. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I just heard a report that we make 5 trillion plastic bags a year.
Oh boy!
And so I don't know if you, I just kind of tuned in late, but if we table salt or sea salt,
mm-hmm.
It's all full of plastic, like microparticles. So
really, this in the salt? My gosh, I didn't know that.
Well, it's washing up and evaporating with the salt, and so it's something that could be leading to a variety of ailments. So I just wanted to chime in and get that tidbit out there.
Well, that is very interesting. Thanks for that. Thanks for telling us that. That is interesting. I didn't know that. So the when you're shaking out a little salt on your dinner, you're getting little minute quantities of plastic besides. It's certainly in our food chain. So we have another caller. Mark is on the air. Good morning, sir.
Hello, Bear.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I just wanted to bring up the fact that before there was oil, back, I think, most of the oil for lamps came from whales.
That's right, uh-huh.
And so huge amounts of oil were actually, you know, they'd kill the whale and then they would boil down the blubber and get the oil. And if you can imagine that almost all the oil in the entire, I mean, oil for lamps for the entire world was supplied by whales.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Should we go back to that?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, well, the idea now is that we're switching to green energy, which is mainly electricity produced by hydropower or solar power, and that is sort of our future, sort of maybe is our only way out. But I got a couple more callers, so thanks for that information.
Bye, Bear.
Okay, who else is online? Sunny is on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Pear. Interesting show as usual. Thank goodness we've made it to solar because people do like their illumination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very hopeful. And I thought that there were some recent very strong developments in the area of retention of your energy production in a solar system. I heard about that maybe around 2009, where you can actually store what your solar system is producing. But there are these things that have come forward that have been significant, and they get buried underneath our, you know, media culture, which is inundating us with all sorts of things. But what I wanted to say is, we need to get housing on the lottery, and when we build our new communities, we need to make them very pedestrian friendly, you know, make room for emergency vehicles to pull up to businesses and such. But we need to design business centers that are very pro walking and riding your bike there, but if you're disabled you can get a vehicle in there for parking and etc. We just have to, I guess, Europe and Holland has done that more, and people are a lot happier that way. Like, for instance, there are many businesses that come and go and come and go because parking is forever a challenge and a problem. You see more businesses go down because of parking than you see able to hang on. So if a business makes it, then they have the challenge of they're really popular and people can't get in there to them. Like if they closed off Northwest 23rd, which maybe they do, I'm not in touch with hardly anything that's going on, but if they close down some of these popular or areas that want to be popular shopping venues for a couple of days a week where people could get in there on max and with their bikes and walk and etc., we could hold on to business sustainability, because we got to hold on to business, and we need to get industrial hemp going, and we need to get ceramics and glass production. We have an abundance of possibilities in our region that could employ people and give them a clean future, economic future. But the thing I wanted to ask you real fast is, what do you think about Trump and Kim of North Korea getting close? That makes me even more uncomfortable than if
the whole thing seems so kind of bizarre in a way. I don't know. I'm just watching this or trying to figure it out as we go along. But it seems to me that the U.S. side, Trump and his cohorts, they sort of, one minute they're getting very tough and blustery, and then the next minute they're seem more in line to, I don't know where they're going or what they expect, but obviously, yes, it'd be very nice to denuclearize the whole Korean area, but it's not something that they're going to do right off the bat. So
I doubt if they ever really do it. I think that a lot of our leadership has gone crazy and we're left on our own. Although Merkley, I think, going down there to the border to look into what's happening with their families and their kids is highly commendable. And if we could get a battalion of senators to go down there with a whole giant flanks of citizens and say, what is happening? That would be good, too. And I expect that something like that will happen.
Well, thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you.
I think that eventually the solution for the whole Korean thing would be Korea will become integrated into the Eurasian, Chinese, Russian, Eurasian civilization or economic sphere. Because if you want to have a train going from, say, South Korea, from Seoul, all the way through Asia into Europe, that train has to go through North Korea. So North Korea will become part of this big economic entity, which is beginning to form right now, which actually was a big power back in the Middle Ages, but it got supplanted by the European colonizers. But now the Eurasian Economic Union is returning. That's another thing about the future. It may be in Asia, but I think we have another caller on the line. An anonymous caller. Hello, sir.
Yes, hi.
Oh, okay. Yes, how are you?
Good, thank you. I just wanted to bring up the fact that I've done a lot of research in oil and gas. That's because I was injured by it years ago, and I learned a lot of stuff. And I think people should do very deep research. No one ever talks about where it comes from. How do we get it? And I have done that. And all we ever say is fossil fuel. It's fossil fuel. It's dinosaurs. No. The dinosaurs are dead. Basically, they're dead matter. Anything alive, animals, plants, humans, once they're dead, bacteria is going to eat them. And then that bacteria, when it releases its gases, and it has to be trapped, though. That's how it makes petroleum, oil, gas, etc. Comes from all that. I think we have maybe a low supply. I think oil will outlast humans. With the huge population that we have, there's going to be plenty of oil. That's just something to think about. That's depressing that I won't continue any further, but with the technology that we have, I believe that there is going to be a lot of oil.
Well, the only problem is, what do you do with all the waste products? I mean, that's we're running out of places to store the waste safely, and so that may curtail the whole project there.
You can call it a conspiracy theory, you know, whatever you like, but I just believe there's plenty to come in the future, because we have plenty of live matter. We don't have dinosaurs, but we have, you know, what we have. I'm going to leave it there.
Okay.
Thank you
for that point of view. I think it's a minority point of view right now. I think people see the end of the oil age coming fairly rapidly, but like I said, the problem is, where do you store the waste? Which would include the waste is not just the heat pollution. It's heating up the atmosphere, which is changing our climate. So that is considered a waste. There's no place to put all the heat that where sunlight comes in and it gets trapped, and it warms up the planet, and so this leads to all sorts of drastic consequences. So that is sort of the end of the oil age, and this is also, I think, the end of this show. We are at near the end of our half hour. I hear the music playing, so thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia, and then at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And then Between the Covers, author Amy P. Knight talks about her new genre-bending novel, Lost, quote, almost. And then at 11:30, Black Book Talk wants to know what is on your summer reading list. So call in and join the conversation. Thank you to KBOO members for your support. So to keep informed and get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Become a member. Become part of your radio station.
Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KABU Community Radio is hiring an archive contractor for 40 hours a week for $20 an hour. This is a contract position that will last from July through December of 2018. The archive contractor will steward the KABU archival assets in all forms. They will work with historical KABU content in many audio formats, as well as the Resource Space Archival Database, documents of KABU history, and KABU staff and volunteers. Please send in a resume, cover letter, and answer the question, why is KABU important, to del@kboo.org. That's del@kboo.org. More information about responsibilities and position requirements can be found at kboo.fm.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.